Every day, it seems like another device is getting smarter. From smart watches to Wi-Fi enabled LED bulbs, everything around us is becoming more connected and efficient. And just like our world is getting smarter, your e-commerce business should be too. If you're looking for incredible efficiency, or if your business has outgrown its old shipping solutions, ShipStation is the tool that can help you take that next step. ShipStation offers exceptional shipping efficiency with a powerful all-in-one order fulfillment system. It integrates with over 180 of the most popular e-commerce platforms, marketplaces, and carriers, making it easier than ever to manage your shipping tasks. I personally use ShipStation, and let me tell you, it's a game changer. The ability to automate shipping tasks and manage orders from one simple dashboard has saved me countless hours. I love that I can print shipping labels with just one click and take advantage of industry-leading discounts. Up to 89% off with carriers like UPS, DHL Express, and USPS. It's made scaling my business faster and more efficient than I ever thought possible. Plus, saving thousands on shipping costs is just the icing on the cake. If you want to lead your business into the future with technology designed to save you money and headaches, ShipStation is the way to go. It seamlessly integrates with the services and selling channels you already use, and it's the fastest, most affordable way to ship products to your customers. Over 130,000 companies have already grown their e-commerce businesses with ShipStation. And 98% of those that use it for a year become customers for life. So switch to ShipStation today and lead your e-commerce business into a smarter future. Go to ShipStation.com and use code BOOK, B-O-O-K, to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code BOOK.
So, Jay, thank you very much for being here.
My pleasure. Are they all local, national? Where's everybody from?
From all over, I think. We got people from all over that come in. We do the masterminds once a month here at SoFi. Do them all over the country as well.
But, oh, great.
You know, it's interesting because I'm right at a certain age where I grew up with personal development when most people didn't understand it.
It was in the early stages, they didn't.
And I saw sales, the Dennis Waitley's, the Zig Ziglar's,
sure,
as truly the Mike Bosworth, who you may know from Southern California, solution selling guys, as the first personal development type of individuals. They were teaching a lot of the same mindset because a lot of the original sales people that were hired into the corporations as consultants were really personal development people. They were talking about mindset because they've read Carnegie and Napoleon Hill. And
don't forget Frank Metzger.
There you go. And then today, though, you know, it's a $1 trillion industry, which you have started. You and, you know, Marshall Goldsmith and others in my life. How for you has personal development as a business changed? And has your purpose changed within the context of how the business has changed?
Wow, good question. I think that it's gotten pretty cluttered. Yeah. And it's very hard to discriminate. But I think the good news that always fascinates me is I've been trained all my life, David and everybody, pardon my voice, to focus on performance enhancement, how you could lever up all kinds of facets of your being. And so I think what's really interesting is in the beginning, the industry was macro. So, okay, I mean, it's positive thinking, motivation, you know, shifting your belief systems. But now, besides evolving pretty cool, there are all kinds of experts who see very, very insightfully tactical areas of your being that have huge performance enhancement. Stephen M. R. Covey in in trust building. It has a 300% potential increase. Sally Hogshead in being fascinating, 200 or 300% increase. Roger Love in strategic communication, 200 or 300%. And there's bunches of those. And then people have isolated mental models, which are really interesting. The elements that are driving your whole belief system that either liberate enormous achievement or constrain it. There's people that have figured out constraint theory. I mean, it's actually rather fascinating, and it can be overwhelming because you have to divide and conquer. You have to decide, where do I start? I think that's very hard because the offerings are multitudinous, and then it gets even more exacerbated with self-publishing. It was one thing when a Prentice Hall or or Harper's would be discriminating because they're putting money out. They would only basically offer books that they thought both were meaningful but also sexy. Now, I mean, I don't know how many hundreds of millions of books are self-published, and there's a tragedy and there's a fascination. Most of it is crap, but there are probably people with profound insight who'll never really be acknowledged because they don't know how to market. They've chosen a terrible title. They've articulated their methodology in such a droll and boring way that it's not powerful enough. But I've been a student. So here's what was very interesting about me. And anybody that's followed me should know this. I've been involved in over 1,000 industries worldwide. Totally different. I've been able to look at all kinds of differential and performance belief systems, actions, strategies, business models. But I've also, and this is what's really interesting, I've also helped in my younger career about 300 world-class experts. The Tonys, the Brian Tracys, just all kinds of special, everybody. And none came to me with a desire for me to help them maximize their methodological discipline. They wanted to command more value. They wanted to be charged more. They wanted people to see the concrete implication and didn't know how. But I had to get a short course compression education. So I understand a lot of shit. And that's in answering your question. I have everything in me is usually a dichotomy. It's a dyad. It's sort of the tale of two cities. And I think it's disgusting that so much crap is out there. I think it's remarkable that so much I would call it a sort of nuclear refinement is out there. Because if you can understand yourself and you can isolate, just like medicine now, the real, it's like your DNA and everything else, the genomes, you can figure out the precise areas that are going to give you the highest leverage first, second, third. I think that's remarkable. Does that answer okay?
It does very well. And to that, in all the noise, the size, scope, and scale of the audience is exponential.
Yeah.
So growing up and paying money to sit into a room of 100 or 1,000 people, the community was so small, and you could have directed marketing, which I grew up in technology and
sure.
sports and entertainment.
Sure.
There's a different energetic nuance to marketing today. And it's because I call it a Shakespearean theory. That Shakespeare had some sort of vision into the future, that the whole world was his stage. And it held true throughout history that if anyone, the whole world is Shakespeare's stage. If you right. ask people who Hamlet is in any country in the world,
yes.
most people would know who Hamlet is. And so although his stage was very small when he wrote what he wrote, the whole world, he had the insight that the whole world was his stage. Today, everyone realizes the whole world is your stage.
Yes.
And I don't think they understand the impact of that. And it's the duality that you're talking about that is, for me, so impactful about the whole world being my stage. Because I think about growing up in Akron, Ohio, and in Fairlawn, a specific county of Akron, Ohio. And if I had an alternative vision of my life, I would not have anyone to accept me.
Okay.
And today, we actually have a broader horizon of acceptance that we can find our tribe. We can find and build a social silo, a community of people of like-minded, like-hearted, and like-handed people. And we can build a brand, even if it is, like you said, crap. Because there's a whole bunch of crappy people that like crap.
Yeah.
And, you know, we see that in politics, religion, philosophies, and theories today, where we didn't have that opportunity and we didn't have that issue. How do you suggest leaders today to build their community, their social silo, noting how you have built so many communities for people in a traditional sense without the world truly being accessible? Now the whole world is accessible to great minds. How do they best, like you said, get revealed?
Well, I think the first is getting clarity on your intention. I mean, I've always believed, and I said this, I was talking to Sean 5 minutes earlier, and I said, I think you're rewarded in life in direct proportion to the quality, quantity, and consistency of problems you solve and opportunities you make possible for others. And you contribute before you get compensated. And I think I said intention. Is your intention to make a profound difference? And if it is, you have a moral responsibility, sort of like the medical doctor, to do thine patient no harm. And I think that's something that a lot of young people don't exercise or recognize. You want to add value, but you want to do no harm. So when I promise you, you're going to make $1 trillion in your underwear watching Oprah, and because I'm going to give you the funnel, I'm probably taking advantage of you. And even if I make a lot of money and you like me to say fuck, it's probably not the greatest value creator you could be. Now, you're right. There are people who go, I love that shit. And that's okay. But you know, from my point of view, I've always taught the strategy of preeminence. You want to be basically seen as the most trusted advisor, the only viable solution that the market you're targeting could possibly turn to. And you earn that by your actions and your intentions. I don't know if that makes sense to you, but that's still what my belief system is. I mean, the people I've helped, 99% have an ethos that is rarefied at a strata of significance in service to their audience. It doesn't mean they don't make a ton of money. They do, but that's the reward that comes from the different way of thinking and acting in service to others.
And aligned with the service to others are the intention, as you stated, which is for me congruent with behaviors of what we do, behaviors of what we say, behaviors of what we think, feel, and believe. And I believe that we've lost the intention of behavior, and because we're so outcome based, because of the amount of content that is thrown at us, we don't have to seek anymore. It is thrown at us. And so because of that, we are stuck into an interference of what we want people to think instead of what I am.
Yeah.
I think call it the great energy suck.
No, I think that's really interesting. This is like a Rorschach. I like this. I would say this, that the real tragedy today, when I got started, it probably was always possible, but I was not just discriminating. My ideals were very high, and I would not help anybody I didn't believe really added, and again, it was subjective, profound value to their audience above and beyond every one of their generic, or if they didn't, I would help them before I would actually help them. I would help them re-engineer their value proposition, their belief system, their sense of contribution. Today, if you're a great marketer, you can be a worthless provider, and a very large segment of the marketplace doesn't recognize that. That's tragic.
You mean like a 19-year-old life coach?
Yes. Yes, right. That is exactly right. Who's going to? And I said, I have a very storied life. I've been very blessed. I've helped many iconic people, and I've done it around the world. But you will not see pictures of me having dinner with somebody. You will not see my car collection. I have some very nice cars. You won't see my home. And I have a very spectacular home in Palos Verdes, and I'm right on the water. And I don't do that. If that's how you would ascribe success, it has nothing to do with you. It has nothing to do with you. It could mean I can you know, perpetrate all kinds of fraud and have that shit. So I think you gotta, somebody said, If you don't know what you stand for, who you stand for, why you stand for it, and what standing for it means as far as how you're disseminating it and getting feedback, you can't possibly achieve what I call greatness.
And I asked my grandma before she passed, what question should I be asking?
Well, that's a great question to ask. What was your answer?
That's what she said. She goes, you know what? It seems like you're already on the right path.
Yeah, and what'd she say?
And she told me, when you meet someone that's in a position that you want to be in or better, one of the questions that you should ask them is, what books did you or should you read? Because that will give you, for the amount of time, the path in so many lessons.
That assumes that you admire who they are, what they are. I agree.
Correct. And so I'm asking you, what books had a significant impact on your life?
So I'm ashamed to tell you, I know I was a voracious reader up until about 15 years ago, and I'm a disgustingly poor reader now, but I have a shortcut advantage. I have so many impressive clients who are obsessive readers that I'm able to distill what they got.
Great summaries live.
Yeah, it should be a better than Blinklist.
Right.
But when I was young, I was impacted by a lot of very interesting marketing books that understood value creation and taking risk away from the market and preeminence. And they were people that lived, believe it or not, in the 30s and 40s when you didn't have the benefit of sophisticated graphics and special effects or sexuality. You had to really just understand how the mind worked, and you had to have an appreciation. Oh, you didn't, but if you wanted to be superior, you had to have an appreciation and for your audience. Part of my preeminence is based on that. It's that you have to not fall in love with your industry or your business or your product or service. You fall in love with the market you serve, and you live with the awareness of what it's like when your product or service is at work, deployed, protecting, enhancing, enriching, entertaining the audience. And it's a really different, but a lot of those books, I read Think and Grow Rich, and I read Frank Betzger, and I read Stephen Covey because he was a colleague and a client, and I read Stephen M.R. because he was a client, and I read Tony, and they're all impactful, but I think probably very frankly, I got more value by being hopelessly curious and going out of my way to be interested in everybody's life story, their creation story, how they got there. And I really want, every time I'd meet somebody at the end of an interaction, I would spend 10 or 15 minutes privately saying, what just happened? What did I learn that I didn't know? What did I admire that I didn't really ever think about? What communication attributes did that person have that I really need to borrow? What did I loathe about either their attitude, prejudice, short-sighted? And I learned something that most people don't learn how to do, how to be very interested and how to listen and how to hear and not be in such a hurry to cue up your side of the conversation. And when you master that, it transforms your relationship with people, whether it's one-on-one or even if you're going to do it vicariously, because you evoke an aura of connectivity that is very, very different than the maddening crowd.
Which reinforces one of my favorite taglines, which is, be more interested than interesting.
I agree.
Which my older brother told me years ago and changed my life.
People are fascinating. I mean, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I've had so many mentors that I can't isolate one. And one of them gave me a profound admonishment once. He said, your purpose in life, a couple things. First, anytime you interact with anybody for any reason, for any amount of time, short, long, your goal is to make them better off because you were in their life. It could be a smile, can be listening, could be contributing, can be comforting, it can be inspiring, but it's that's first. Second is, and it's a Stephen Covey one, is seek to understand before you try to be understood. Figure out, first of all, try to examine, explore, understand, appreciate, whether you like or not, and acknowledge how the other side sees life, because you have to, they're not going to appreciate you until they feel that they are appreciated. Doesn't mean you agree with them, but they are your employees, they are your employers, they are your vendors, they are your prospects, they are your buyers, they are your friends, they are your relatives, they are your husband, your wife, and appreciate that your view is not necessarily the right or the wrong or the only. And when you get more open-minded, I think that the whole process has vastly more more expansive, more exponential meaning. A little metaphysical, but...
No, well, in the respect of exponential, which is a characteristic of energy itself, time, money, space that aggregates and accelerates, it creates exponentiality through consistent behavior. Where I wanted to land on was time. A lot of people that have worked with corporate executives and in the personal development space teach about, mentor and coach about my love language, which is time. And I see things and break it into two different time zones. One, man-made constructive time. What are we doing with the 24 hours that we're blessed with each day, except for, as I say, the last day of our life when we cheated. But the infinite or divine time, which causes confusion and conflict in our daily activity, in our daily purpose, for the sake of what am I doing this, we have to reconcile the 24 hours to be productive, accessible, and gracious, or whatever our goals are today or in the future, with this idea of infinite time. And I find that a lot of my clients, the people that I empower, have a real difficult time with time.
Yeah.
And I was hoping you could share some.
Yeah, and I'm a poster boy for adult attention deficit and a mad scientist, so I'm probably not the very best person to ask that question, but I can give you observed answers that are hypocritically not always what I follow. So there are people out there that understand operational efficiency. There are people understand the highest and best use theory, that you've only got a finite. I mean, there's nobody out there, you know, unless you're a remarkable time, whatever you call them, time twister, you're not going to get more than 24/7. How you use it, how you abuse it, how you disrespect it is going to denominate and determine the quality of your life, the outcome of your life, the joy and the enrichment, both financially and psychically. I think the highest and best use theory is something everybody should really understand, because there are many, when you're fortunate as I have been to look at 1,000 plus industries and hundreds of experts, you realize you can use opportunity, time. I mean, I have a slide, I'll send it to you, where I that show that all these assets you don't think about. Time is an asset, opportunity is an asset, access to a market is access, your team is an asset, and you can get a lot more leverage out of it. And if you don't know how to, those are the areas that you have competitive advantage if you can figure how to use it more adroitly. Also, enrichment. What do you get out of your time? You know, I can't manage worth the crap, so I don't. Somebody interviewed me and said, what's your management strategy? I said, my management strategy is to find somebody running a company with an enormous overhead and an alligator they have to feed and make them my partner, because I don't want to do it. I can feed the alligator, but I don't want to manage it. I don't want the overhead. But I mean, you got to figure out where your superpower is, or whatever you want to call it. And you want to really focus on that. I mean, I'm going to name somebody, and I don't know if you like him, dislike him, but Perry Marshall has this really interesting quadrant. I don't know if you've ever seen it.
Oh yeah.
And I like it because he talks about Renaissance time and he talks about barnacle time. And I get people to try to do a chronology, a sort of a forensic review of the last month of their business. They go, oh, I'm so busy. Well, what you're saying is I abuse most of my time, because most people, they don't, and using time well sounds almost medicinal and sterile. But there's another context. How much enrichment should you get out of the time you've been blessed with? How many ways could you utilize it, you know, to better enrich the world, to better use your access vehicles to better understand your market, yourself. I think most people don't have a very expansive worldview.
Well, just to finish up, because
you... And I'm not trying to be critical. I'm being critical.
You actually brought up a great word when it comes to time, and it's blessed. I had a conversation with my daughter yesterday, and she's feeling overwhelmed. And I said, oh, aren't we blessed? She's like, Dad, I can't keep up. I got some. I said, aren't we blessed? We have more options, opportunities, and touches of favor.
Yeah.
How will your problems prioritization and the humility of waking up every day and saying, I'm blessed, number one, with 24 hours of today. And then I'm also blessed with so many different options, opportunities. And it's my responsibility to align or to prioritize those with the opportunities in alignment with my divine direction of knowing for the sake of what.
So, you know, I do stuff with Tony Robbins.
Yeah.
And
I actually thought it was the other way around.
He and I do a day together. We just finished it with his Platinums and his Lions. And a couple of years ago, we do $25,000 person, 3-day makeovers. Not often, but they're really interesting. And he did a surprise video for me for about 20 minutes. I'll be happy to let you use it for your group if you like. But he talked about the fact that most people can only handle 3 or 5 dynamics. And he said 3, 5, too many. And when you have too many options, then you can get overwhelmed. And, you know, he's always used the word chunk. But I think you got to be able to, but I always tell people is let's start with a spectrum of all the options, the opportunities and optionality. I always love. I love having as many arrows in your quiver as you can, but they're not all the same relative weight or significance. I mean, the Stephen R. Covey had his other quadrants, you know, I can't remember, effective, important, urgent, whatever. But I think that the way to really achieve, and I used to teach greatness, and I thought, and I'll just give you a very sobering reflection. I believe that every human being is innately programmed in their DNA to want to be great, but most people are mediocre. And I don't think it's because they want to be. I don't think anybody wants to be a mediocre entrepreneur, a mediocre salesman or woman, a mediocre husband, wife, father, mother, lover, friend. And yet most people are. And I don't think it's intentional, but no one helps them see differential, what greatness can look like for them, where they are, and a mechanism to get there. And I think you got to realize that you've got all these options in your life. Multitude, too many. But if you don't start by saying, okay, what are my options? What are the relative mission criticalness, importance? And if you study things like that, which I've accidentally been forced to do when I helped an expert, and you realize that this concept of the theory of constraint, it's really like a logjam. If you say, okay, my life, my business is a logjam. It doesn't matter where you are. You can be successfully stuck and think you're doing great where there's so much more capacity with time, effort, opportunity, capital, human capital, all these things. And the first thing is figuring out what one or two or three things, if you remove them from the quotient, would most probably, most viably, most consistently, and most significantly release a lot more performance. And performance isn't necessarily your denominator. I mean, the idea of wealth and richness is very rarely purely denominated monetarily. So many other intangibles.
Since 1981, Justin has been producing world-class Bordeaux-style wines from Paso Robles on the California Central Coast. As a pioneer of the region, Justin Wines helped put Paso Robles on the winemaking map. The Justin team believes the wine should be exceptional in every aspect, which is why they use boutique winemaking practices like hand harvesting and hand sorting. With a rich history of accolades, Justin is proud to produce exceptional wines and hold the title of America's number one luxury Cabernet. Whether you're a first-time wine drinker or a seasoned aficionado, Justin has the perfect wine for every occasion. Visit justinwine.com and enter promo code PLAYBOOK20 for 20% off your order. Justin Wines also makes the perfect holiday gifts for clients, colleagues, friends, or family. Don't miss out. Visit justinwine.com and use the promo code PLAYBOOK20 for 20% off for a limited time.
I'll give you a conclusion from my life, which was very profound for me. So I was too talented for my own good when I was young. I've had three midlife crises. I got started the first time at 18. So at about 40, I had the first one, and I went to a therapist, and it was very frustrated for me because we'd get into the dialogue and he would look at his watch and he'd say, your 50 minutes are over. And it was like a cliffhanger, and I'd come back a week later frustrated. I had another one at approximately 50, same thing. And then I thought, did you ever see, did you ever watch the first Indiana Jones, Raiders of the Lost Ark? Do you remember when he was being chased down the bazaar by the two very, very serious looking villains and he tried to slip into an alley to get away and it turned out to be, it was a dead end and there was that 7-foot giant spinning those, what are they called, sitars?
Yeah.
And you thought he was a goner for a minute, but it was only 20 minutes in the movie, so it probably wouldn't be. And he finally said, screw that shit, and pulled out a gun and shot him. Well, you have the ability in your life to change the game, to change the game. If you so, you don't have to play the same game the same way. And what I was going to say was, so at 60, when I had another one, because I kept having success and it was anticlimactic, I got all the material shit I wanted. I had a gorgeous wife, beautiful children, but I was still anticlimactic. And so I bought a guy for a whole week. I just said, I'm going to buy you for a week. And if I can't come, I'm going to send every screwed up person I know. And it was laughable because it was fun. But when I was there, I talked for hours and hours, and I came up with one outcome that forever denominated, redefined my life. And I'll share it, and then I got to go. And here's what he said. Most people are obsessed with the end product. You want to make $1 trillion. You want to have the fastest growing company. You want to have the most beautiful wife, the most toys. A man wants the biggest, you know what. If you're unlucky enough to get that for that reason, and you think the heavens are going to open, the angels are going to trumpet, Nirvana is going to bestow, it's bullshit. It's anticlimactic. What he said was the process is everything. This conversation is as good as it gets. And it's same thing. I mean, when I used to go to Asia and I used to speak all over, I would drink like mad because I'd go on great airlines that had magnificent, you know, Dom and everything. And then I'd take the first day and hydrate and sleep. And the next day I'd sit in the lobby smiling at people who normally don't smile till they smile back. I would get in the elevator and stand at the door looking in, not out, until people smiled back. I would get off on every floor, and I would try to talk to the housekeepers and the servers, even though I didn't speak Japanese or Chinese or Malays or Vietnamese, until they changed their body. And it was fulfilling as shit to me. The process is everything. Thank you.